Welcome to Story of a Storyteller. I'm your host, Connor Braden. This is the show where I found out all about the ins and outs of the lives of storytellers of all kinds. You can find my free novella, The Stolen Dagger, episode show notes, links to all sorts of amazing books, and more at connorbraden.com/podcast. Enjoy!
Just write down what you want to see. I think that's my biggest advice.
But I'm more focused on uniting people.
She said to me, I never would have dreamed. You are a writer.
If the normal works for you, great. If it doesn't, don't beat yourself up over it.
I think anybody can get the words on the page, but a real writer will know how to fix it.
I always kind of feel poverty and hunger nipping at my heels.
Realizing that I wasn't mad.
The one mistake people make when they're submitting things is submitting them too early.
And then my brain just went, you're going to write a book.
You put your heart and soul into a book.
Hello there and welcome to the first ever episode of Story of a Storyteller podcast. I'm so excited to finally be recording this. I've been working on this for a long time. And I'm so excited to bring it out into the world. I'm Connor, if you haven't heard. I'm an indie author and audiobook narrator, and now a podcaster too, I suppose. This is season one of the show, and over the next 10 episodes, I'll be talking to 10 amazing authors about their life stories, why they became writers, and what they hope for in the future. In this episode, I was talking to CJ Agate, or Chris Agate. He's a fellow indie author and a fellow podcaster. Chris is one of the two hosts of the Writing Community Chat Show, as well as author of Deep, The Climb of Truth, and Deep, The Embers of Life. During the interview, we talk about how audiobooks got him into storytelling, how his grandfather inspired him to write, and where he got the idea to do a podcast dedicated to the Writing Community hashtag. Before we get to that, I am planning on also using this podcast as a way to kind of keep myself accountable to being a writer as well. So I'm planning on having a small, like, kind of writer report, I suppose, as a way to just keep me going and, it's more a threat. I don't want to come to another week saying, yeah, I've written nothing all week. So that is the plan. Currently, I am working on a children's fantasy book. It's a portal fantasy, so that's a portal fantasy is a fantasy where the characters are in the real world, the world we live in and know, and then find a way to travel to another world. So things like Narnia, Alice in Wonderland, Peter Pan, they are portal fantasies because that's stories where people go to another world. The one I'm working on is a portal fantasy. It's set in rural Ireland, where children are summoned to another world and end up having to fight in a battle of good versus evil. But there is a fairly large twist I'm working on that I'm quite happy with. Anyway, enough about me. Let's go on to the interview with Chris. Hello, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Story of a Storyteller. I'm here with Chris. I did this already as well. What surname is Agate? Am I saying that right?
Agate, you said that perfectly right. Hello.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being on the show and
I am
being episode.
Sorry, yeah, interrupted. Sorry, I'm very, very honored to be here, honestly. It's my first interview and I'm so glad that you've asked me to come on. Very, very honored.
Actually, I'll have to thank you formally as well for something slightly different because I have been thinking of doing this podcast for a while. It's gone through different iterations and forms and stuff. And then I had a vague idea. And then I saw your tweet saying, how come no one's asked me to be a guest?
Well,
so that as a sign.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it was an accumulation of interviewing a lot of people and then thinking about ways to sell books. And I was thinking, I need to be on a podcast show myself.
Yeah.
And it just hadn't happened. So it must have been in the stars that, you know, fate that arranged it.
Exactly. So just as a brief introduction to anyone who isn't aware of you, Chris has two books written, Deep. They're both Deep something. Can you remind me of the titles?
They are indeed. Deep, The Climb of Truth is the first book in the series, and then Deep, The Embers of Life is what's continued in the sequel. It's being released on the 14th of August. Yeah, get my months mixed up here. Yeah,
of course, everyone can know it because it'll be a huge bestseller by the time this drops. And
oh, wouldn't that be nice? Well, the whole story about behind Deep, you know, naming the book, it definitely wasn't called that when it first got put down on paper.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting. That's a bit of an unknown fact, really, that it was called Highway 5 and the Forest of Drug, if I say that properly.
Okay.
Which kind of relates to the highway, because it's based in America, that my character sort of discovers, and the Forest of Drug, which is a Welsh word for evil. So it was kind of just that sort of instant, what's it about? And I'll put that name down. And then it became Deep because in so many ways, there were so many layers to the characters, to the story, that Deep just seemed to fit.
It's excellent. It seems like a really, really cool book. And of course, it's not just books. You also have, which you're showing us all with your amazing professional background, the Writing Community Chat Show, which we'll get more into that later on. But first, the way I'm doing this podcast is... it's structured like a story because this is about me finding out your story. So we're going to have a beginning, middle, and I don't want to say end. So we're going to say to be continued. So first about your beginning. Can you tell me briefly about your childhood and kind of growing up and any elements of it that you think influenced the fact that you're now an author?
So you know what? As a result of not really being the focus of many conversations in that respect so far, I haven't really gone into that sort of my knowledge or my memories of what maybe prompted me to become an author as I'm older. Because when I was younger, I was very much, I moved around a lot when I was younger, all around Wales, South Wales, West Wales, and I never really settled down. And I was very much into movies from a young age. You know, I remember, I guess, two of my favorite films now are Platoon and Aliens, the second of the Alien movies.
Okay,
and I remember being quite, you know, as an 80s child, my parents watching these downstairs, and I just remember hearing them thinking, what is this? What is this noise? And what are they watching? And being intrigued into film that way. And I'm still very much into films now. And potentially that's kind of where it stemmed from. So I didn't start writing until early last year. And that was a result of my granddad passing. Now, he was someone who's did a lot in his life. And you talk, a lot of people at funerals, they get sad, but a lot of people look at the work that they've done in their life. And this was someone that just made me feel very proud to be related to, you know, with the achievements that he had in his career and all sorts of different things. So I thought after that, you know, what can I do? I've done a lot in my life already, but I thought, what can I do to kind of make me feel a bit more, if my day was tomorrow, you know, would I be happy? And I thought, you know, I kind of would, but I'd like something else there to be there. So when I started writing the first of Deep, the Climb of Truth, even get the right book, I didn't realize I loved writing at that point. I didn't realize I could be an author either. Yeah. It was just something to say that I've done this and I've achieved this. And it was something that I didn't even, I guess, see that would be a completed project.
Okay.
So when I finally
when you started,
did complete,
were you more doing it for yourself than a goal of selling it and stuff? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was kind of the trap that got me. It was literally to say to someone, you know, I have released this book and I did it. Project done. I'm happy and I was going to leave it there. But it never worked out that way because as soon as I started writing, getting drawn into the characters and just really enjoying that process, I was hooked. So that was it.
It's class how, like, it's a cliche you always hear authors say, and until you try to write your own book or story, it's the whole thing of, oh no, the characters kind of came to life, or they spoke to me, or, you know, it's a kind of a it's a kind of variation on that, isn't it?
I guess so. It was just even the process, you know, and of actually believing. And it was one of those things that once I had released the book, or even before then, and I was, you know, sending it to friends and family, say, look, you know, can you read this for me? Can you give me your honest opinion? And no matter how much I asked for like an honest opinion, even if they were giving me their genuine honest opinion, I did not believe what they were saying.
Yeah.
And I had great feedback. And I was just thinking, nah, you know, they're just saying that. And still it's taken this long, and I, you know, I've got a decent amount of reviews now from people that aren't my friends or family that make me trust in my ability now. So it's really good.
And they're the only interviews that count, really, aren't they? The ones that they don't look at you as a person, they just look at you as an author, you know.
That, well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, it's one of the best feelings. And I mentioned this on Twitter the other day that someone had bought my book on paperback, and I'd done a promotion push for ebooks and they did very well. You may have seen that it actually got to number one in the horror suspense category on Amazon charts, which I was blown away by. Absolutely. And again, the fact that I never intended to do anything but the achievement of writing a book, that was such a surprise as well. So it's just an overwhelming thing. So when someone buys the actual physical book, it really pleases me to think that they're going to sit, you know, in their world with a physical copy of the work that you created. I love that, and I think it's brilliant.
I'll always be grateful to my boyfriend, because when I ordered a physical copy of my first book as a proof thing, I just came in and I was like, oh, it came, and I had it in the envelope. And he was like, no, don't. And he took a video of me opening it.
Oh, okay.
And okay. I still, like, I'm really grateful he did that, because I didn't want to take a video at first. And
yeah. Then
I did, and I was like a kid at Christmas times a million, like, you know.
That is something that I've slightly mentioned on the show before on our show, but you have to appreciate that time because I didn't. And I was so stressed about the whole releasing process and what people might think that I didn't slow down and enjoy the process at all. And it wasn't until this second book that's coming up very soon, I'm now very excited. But the first time round, I think you really need to slow down and really appreciate each moment that you, a milestone that you achieve, because it's worth it.
You kind of have to take stock. And as well, I think, a lot of it, especially, like I say this, like I have only the one book out and written.
Yeah.
But I think if you don't stop at that moment and appreciate, and not only that, celebrate the fact that you've achieved something as monumentous as writing a book, it kind of takes away from the importance of it, I think.
Absolutely. You know.
So then, like, let's just take a step back then. So we've talked a lot about the kind of end product, but what I'm really interested in is how you got to the start. You mentioned your granddad passing away. So Was he an avid reader or anything, or was it just the fact that he had so many lots of little achievements, you just wanted to emulate that?
Strangely, I mean, reading in my family, you know, my older sister growing up, I've got two older sisters. I think she was the one in the family that would like sit down and read a book. But it wasn't something I really did a lot. And I picked up a few books over the years, you know, more like along the health things and, fitness and those sort of things. But it wasn't until I really got into audiobooks and audio dramas that I really fell in love with stories in that respect.
Okay.
Which is why when we had Casey Wayland on the show, I don't know if you ever listened to that episode where I was completely fanboying out at that point. And that was my most difficult episode, I guess. But so that those sort of audio dramas really inspired me in that respect. But I don't think it was definitely more the case that his achievements in life in general, rather than like a reader, is what inspired me to want to do that. But there's obviously something that I've got inside me that's very creative. And I mean, I've written some terrible songs over the years that just needed to come out, even though they were just terrible. So there's obviously something that was nagging there that was saying create.
Yeah.
And then obviously when I stuck my, I was going to say pen to paper there, obviously got my keyboard out and started typing, then it just kind of naturally happened. And I'm more of a Panzer type writer, so I didn't plot any of this story, and I just started typing, and the story was, it was kind of something that was kind of there, but I don't know why it was there. And I just started writing, and it just blossomed in that respect. So when I was younger, I don't think there was much influence in terms of books. But definitely that there was a story there. There was inspiration of movie films, definitely, and just a creative nudging from within somewhere that was telling me to write. So I think that was more that respect. And in, you know, sorry, didn't go on there, but in school, for example, this is on my website, and you can read this, that I actually, through English in school, there was one point, and I was never really keen in school. Not that I wasn't, I guess, intelligent enough, because I think now I'm older and more mature and more focused, I can actually do things quite well. But at that point, I was kind of like just you know, my head wasn't really there and I was running around playing rugby and just doing all the things that I guess people do in school. Look out the window at the summer's grass and just wish I was there, yeah, daydreaming a lot. So I remember one specific project we had, and it was like to create a short story. And I wrote some crazy, it was about a boat sinking. I can't even remember the details, but I remember someone reading it out and basically laughing, and the teacher people laughing at me about what I'd written. And it kind of put me off anything like that for a long time. Not that it was anything that I thought I'd want to do in the first place. It was just an instant turn off in that respect. So, yeah, you know, it wasn't something in school that I was good at that I later picked up. It really wasn't on the radar at all.
See, that, like, just that's something that really gets to me because I'm a primary teacher. And
yeah,
like, I remember hearing that on your first episode of your show, you spoke with the other Chris, and it drove me demented because it just goes to show the long-term effects. Not necessarily that maybe we can never say, but the path not taken, if you haven't been laughed at that day, or if the kids did laugh at you and the teacher stood up for you and said, actually, no, this is really good and he did a great job, we mm-hmm. might have been on book 6 of the Deep series instead of just book 2. But the point is, you still got there. And I think it's really interesting as well that you said that you were never really mad into books and reading and stuff like that, because that also shows that literally everybody is capable of writing a good book.
Yeah. I go on, I speak a lot about how that age, you have a pivotal moment where if you are into, or someone's asking you to read a book perhaps, and you're not really into it, you want to watch computer or play the computer games, you want to watch telly, and someone's saying, read this book, and you finally give in, think, do you know what, I'm going to read the book at a young age, and then you think, oh, I'm not into that. That could be your breaking point there, that you either never pick a book up again, or if you pick it up and you read it and you think, actually, this is throwing me into a world I didn't know existed. That is such a pivotal point in life that it could change, not only for you to read a lot more, and as you said, you could then create, you could be the next Stephen King from that position, you know? So there's no telling that guidance at that age is crucial. And I, do you know what? I saw something the other day that my wife pointed out, that they said that they had paid their son £1 for every single book they read. Oh, and they're like, yeah, did you see this? Yeah. So he was £100 down or something through the year. And he said, that's the best investment I've ever made. And I absolutely love that.
Yeah, I thought it was genius. And that's one thing when you said about someone could give you a book and you half read it and you don't enjoy it. That's one thing I always try to get through to kids, because there is a certain age, and it's like from 8 to 11-ish, where if they don't read a book that they absolutely love during that age, I find they're not going to be a massive reader usually.
Yeah,
it's always the exception that makes the rule. So whenever a kid says to me, I don't like reading, I say, no, you love it. You just haven't found a book you love yet.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things that if you're at a young age and, as you said, you're not reading regularly for the fun of reading, and then you get to school where you feel pressured to read in front of people, again, that's a massive turnoff. So with our daughter at the moment, she's 4, we are making sure that every single night it's a book or a story, at least one, ends up about 3 or 4, is read before bed, just to keep that habit and kind of just put it as part of life. But yeah, she grows up to think is normal, I guess.
Yeah. And it's about like creating that love of story and all that kind of thing. So let's just go back another little bit. So you're now you're inspired by your grandfather and decide to start writing. And I was trawling through your website and I actually wrote down the date. Hang on. It was October 22nd, 2019. So it's not even a year ago you wrote first chapter down, just getting stuck into the second chapter. So how did you get from there to publish? Like, can you bring me through that of the first book?
Was those dates on the website, were they? October 22nd, was it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not even a year. That's the thing I can't get over, because it took
because
to write my book.
I'm sure I released my book in the end of November.
Oh wow, okay.
So it may have been earlier than that I was maybe editing at that point. I'm not sure. Because I'm sure I started writing. I'm not sure if that must have been a later blog maybe, but I'm sure I started writing around April time maybe, because he passed in February. So it was a couple of months before realization of what that nagging sort of thing was. So basically when I started writing, it was it was always been this idea, and the story for the guys that are listening that don't know what the story is. So basically, it's a story about a young woman who is brought up in the woods by her father, who at the time is very sort of regimented, structured, and a kind of disciplinarian. But they eventually have sort of an argument, and she runs off. And whilst she's away, kind of some events happen, and she's forced into a nearby city to find him whilst the kind of city's crumbling around her. So that's the sort of premise of the story. And it's all about following her character and her journey as she sort of develops into this more mature character as a result of the actions she faces. Mm. So for me, the only idea I had was her, and her character was there, and a father figure in the woods. And literally that was it. And for a while, it was just that sort of burning sensation that this story needs to come out. And so I thought, okay, what can I do with this? And as a, if you're not aware, like the Panzer style is kind of watching that create in your mind and following. And luckily I'm quite okay on a keyboard. So I watched this as a movie and discovered it through my eyes. Yeah. And I was able to do this because it was such a story that threw me into it. And I was so eager to find out what happened next. I would just sit there and just be typing away with again. And you might have heard this on the shows before, that I listened to a certain playlist on Amazon, Spotify Music, yeah, which is Creative Playlist. And I don't know which one it is, but if you remind me, I'll try and tag you in it.
Yeah, do.
And you can listen. And it is.
I'll put it in the description for this episode as well.
It's really sort of laid back, sort of piano type music with kind of a cool vibe to it. But it's just something that is there, but it's not distracting in that sense. And so I put the same playlist on over and over every time I start writing, and the same song starts even now, even book two, same playlist. And so I just watched the character. Okay, where would she go, and why would she do this, and what would make it interesting? And strangely enough, some of the twists in the book that have been very much commented on, they almost presented themselves without having to plan it so much in some of the twists anyway. And the sequel was very much the same. And what is happening as a result of those two books is where the characters have intertwined and sort of connected and built their own story, I can say the response of that, but that's not the word, is it? So the accumulation of all those characters twisting and being intertwined throughout the stories is presented itself with a prequel. So okay, that will be the next step. But this, I imagine, will need a lot more plotting compared to the first few books, because it needs to create the story that propels the first two books, if you will.
Yeah. And as well, it's the really kind of useful thing of being a writer is you can make yourself seem amazing by just going, right, okay, I made a small reference to this one thing in book two. I'm going to like go back and make that a big thing in the prequel. So then everyone thinks I'm this amazing.
Yeah. Well, there's a certain few character traits of, say, I guess he's the protagonist through a story, is Eli, who is Daisy's father. Hmm. Early on in the story, you will pick up things, you may not pick up things, but when you go through the story and into book two, you will look back and think, actually, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
So it's good, as you mentioned, that you can put that sort of element in your books and then almost reveal them as the story goes along. And especially if you've got a prequel there, they make a lot more sense. You can even back up that sort of idea, if you will.
For anyone who's listening that is thinking of being a writer, you mentioned that you're a pantser writing. So that comes from the idea of writing by the seat of your pants, that you're, I don't like the phrase making it up as you go along, because it's because I find that doesn't pay respect to the pantser writers out there. But I would, the opposite of that would be a plotzer, which, hi, that's me. But I came across a different term. George R.R. Martin, who wrote the Song of Ice and Fire, the Game of Thrones books, he refers to them as a gardener and an architect instead.
Absolutely.
Which I think is so much nicer. But yeah, I've decided to merge those two, and I'm now declaring there's a new third type of writer, and that's the landscape architect, the one who goes out and has a plan, but is still okay with moving things around and gardening at the same time.
Fantastic. I mean, as you said, it's not making things up. And as much as that may seem, as I've just said, there is a lot of process along that process, there is a lot of ideas that you need to sort of remember, create, and write down. So it's not just literally sitting there and creating a story in that respect. You still need to come up with thoughts and plans and little twists and turns. But, and I did try this because, you know, you talk about software and stuff. I'm sure we'll have a discussion at some point with that. That there was a few things that I went on to and just researched. A lot of research goes into writing, and especially if you're new at writing. So, and the web is fantastic for that, especially, you know, YouTube and podcasts, things like this. So I used some sort of plotting software, and just to see, maybe I'm doing this a bit wrong, let's just see if this works. And for me, it just didn't work. And that doesn't mean it doesn't work for you or for the next person, the next person. It's just finding your style. And I think, as you said, the in-between. So I do Panzer style writing, but I do have notes and ideas that you need to put down. Just like, I think the best way that I've done is kind of like a story overlay, over plot, if that makes sense. So just bullet points of key events that I want in the story. And I will let the characters take me to each one of those points. And as a result of those points, how did they react? And how did the arc of the character then present itself?
Exactly. And like, if something else mad happens in between one bullet point and the next, brilliant.
Bonus points. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that you said that you tried a planning software and it didn't work out, because I also tried writing by the seat of my pants and not plotting. And I actually scrapped like a 30,000 word manuscript because it just was, to me, it was a mess. I actually just put it to one side and started an entirely different book. And that's what I'm working on. The minute is I'm working on a children's fantasy book. So it's just, it's just interesting how everyone has their own style, and that's your style. And if you try to like experiment, definitely, because you might find something else works better. But at the same time, the way you wrote the book is the way you wrote the book, and that's what works for you, you know?
Yep.
So seeing as you're kind of talking about that, like, and we're talking about challenges and everything, what did you find was the most challenging part of writing both your books?
I would say definitely the first book. And the reason I say not the second is I'll explain in a second, but formatting for me was a real, real tricky business, even with the amount of research that I put into my work, because I like to do things myself, but I also like to research as much as possible to make that an easy process. Yeah. So when it came to formatting, and not just, you know,
formatting, like laying it out like at the end of the publishing thing, is that what
you're saying? Yeah, so your page indents and those sort of things as well, so your text sizes and all those certain things, your margins and all that, but also the formatting. If you used if you're a self-publisher like myself, and I used Amazon KDP process, I did design the cover with a friend, so we uploaded that to the cover uploader on Amazon. And they have very specific sort of dimensions and all of that stuff, but it does come back to you and tell you it doesn't fit here, it doesn't fit there, and all that stuff. So writing was hard, just because you have a duration. It's a long process, isn't it? I mean, you start putting ideas down, you think, oh yeah, we'll get this written down, and before you know it, you're up to say 40,000 words. And you've been there for weeks and you're thinking you're impacting on your life and all of that stuff, because it's very time consuming. But that's not the end. I mean, once you've finished your story or your first draft, there's a lot more that comes after that.
So much.
So then you go into your editing, proofreading, beta readers, all of this stuff. And for me, I guess, and this is something I've admitted on the show and I talk about a lot, that a lot of people in self-publishing maybe don't even realize sort of the finances it costs to do things properly or professionally. Yeah. So editors, cover designers. So you've really got to be, before you start writing, my advice would be to look at the potential income, which isn't a lot if you're going through self-published route because you're paying for a service.
No.
And look at what you can afford to put into your book. And for me, the only two negative reviews out of all the reviews I've had, which have generally been 5-star and a couple of 4s in there, were that I need
rag sneaking it in.
Well, yes, but
it's well deserved. Hey, if you get the reviews, tell people you have them, you know.
But the only two negative-ish reviews have come off the back of that promotion. So, you know, getting to that number one spot comes with great responsibility and all that business. So people have had an expectation because that book was sat there of a well-polished book. And it is, for me, I went over it plenty of times, and I've always set out to say this book is for an average reader like myself. So okay. If you have a very critical eye, you can pick up some sort of things that you probably would change. So if you're not going down the route of spending a lot of money in that respect, then you could potentially have these sort of reviews. But I'm fine with it because I know what that book is, and it is an enjoyable story. But if you're going in there to look at the grammar, well, perhaps look at another book.
Yeah. Well, what I think is good is, like, you're setting a really good example for anyone that might be listening that's thinking of self-publishing, because I don't know if you've ever heard of Joanna Penn or J.F. Penn.
Rings a bell.
She's a self-published author. She actually run full-time self-published author, and she has a brilliant podcast called the Creative Pen Podcast. I don't mind plugging it at all, even without her asking me to. It's kind of one of the things. But she always has this phrase that just stuck with me: to have your own definition of success. So
yeah,
if you want to go in and say my definition of success is to be the number one in my category, then congratulations, Chris, you've achieved that. But for other people, it might be even just to get the book written. For other people, it might be to outsell Stephen King. You know, like, as long as you have your own definition of what you want to succeed, and then go from there. Like, my one with my book was, if I can get one 5-star review from a pure stranger with no ties whatsoever, I'm delighted. And 3 weeks after the book published, a review came up, 5 stars, and an amazing comment. I can't remember it in detail, and the name was just Kindle Customer. So I was really oh, brilliant, this is great. That's probably no one I know or whatever. And then I was home a few weeks later over the Christmas, and I was in the pub having a pint with my dad, and a guy that was in my year in school came up to me and said, Connor, I read your book. And it was him. And I was really happy, but at the same time, I was really annoyed. But then a couple of weeks later, I got a few more reviews, and they were definite strangers. So it worked out in the end. But
I'll always remember my first review outside of the friend circle that we spoke about earlier, that, you know, never believed that the friends and family were leaving real reviews. I thought they were making it up. And strangely, that there's a bit of an evil character in my book called Dr. Reverend, who is sort of the guy who starts off all the madness, I guess, that leads to a lot of destruction. And he is called Dr. Reverend. And my first review was in America, and it was a 4-star review. So that for me was like, this is, even though it's not a 5-star, I was thinking, this is fantastic. It's 4 stars. And it's, He said, great story and all this. And it was from a doctor, Reverend. I'm sure it's Dr. Reverend or Mr. Reverend or something. And I was thinking, this is no way. There's no way. But it's like my character had come out of the fiction book and then fiction world and written a review for me. So I love
it. That's brilliant. That's
I'll try and screenshot that for you. I'll try and find it.
Do. Yeah. Yeah. That's really funny. So it's November, you've released your first book, and then a couple of months later, of course, as we all know, pandemic, and we'll just slide over that and just ignore that. But then a couple of months later, you and Chris Hooley start up this whole other thing, because writing a book isn't enough for you, apparently. And I saw a tweet earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday, how you're now doing 4 shows a week or something like that.
Oh, I know. Tell me about it.
Talk me through the start of the Writing Community Chat Show and get us up to speed.
Okay. So for those of you who don't know the show, and it is basically about writers, about authors, about promotion and helping self-published authors along the way, thrown in some guests that we can't quite believe we've had on, some fantastic, fabulous authors, some big star actors. It's just gone a bit crazy. But what happens when the pandemic hit? I was very much into my second novel at the time, editing that as well. And the writing community hashtag on Twitter, if you're not aware of it and you're an author, you must get involved. It is the absolute fountain of knowledge in terms of, you want to know an editor, you want to know someone who can do a book cover, you want to know someone who can just give you general advice about anything. You can reach out and you will be inundated with friendly comments and advice.
Yeah.
And I just thought there's got to be a way to A, pay it back, B, filter that information, because it's everyone who knows who self-publishes and who tries to battle with Twitter, you're fighting against a sea of analytics that you could have the most important tweet in the world and it may just disappear, or you could just say the stupidest tweet in the world and it gets retweeted around the globe. Yeah. So I thought there's got to be a better way of focusing this information that is very valuable. Yeah. So I thought a podcast would be great, writing community podcast or chat show, as we called it, to focus that information and answer the questions that the community had given out and getting people in. But ultimately, I wanted to give self-published authors a voice that was more than a writer's lift, because you can put your book in a writer's lift and become stressful. You're expecting, oh, let's check my Kindle, see if a sale's happened. And you don't see it so much. But I thought if you can get an indie author on the show, give them an interview like they're an A-lister and a spotlight, and ask them about this story, just as we're doing here, then it's a good diving board for people to actually connect with you as a person. And then they might want to look at your story rather than just go retweet, which is great, but it clogs up the system that we need to use.
It's something that you've touched on, something that like I love about Twitter and also hate about Twitter is the idea of writer's lifts and all that kind of thing. It is really useful and it does really help, but it also, like you said, it clogs up a lot of people's feeds and things like that. And I think that's one thing that's great about the writing community chat show, is it really distills all that stuff and lets people come to the fore and lets information come to the fore and things like that, you know? And so you came up with the idea. How did you and Chris connect, and how did you get started with episode one back in March?
Well, episode one actually featured a lady as well, one of our American friends. And we were just basically, the writing community brought us together. And there was, as you know, they're so supportive and it's like a family. Even the writing community chat show has become a family within the writing community, and people just help each other and reach out and, you know, ask them for their links in a writer's lift, and they propel you forward and lift you rather than just go, oh, competition, let's try and jump over that. But you don't, you want to help each other. So there was a lady called Sol who was a great host with us, and Chris Hooley, and basically I reached out to them, the both of them, because I've had such good interaction with them on the community, and I thought that, you know, they've got a good knowledge, they've got a good viewpoint on things, kind of similar to the way I have. And instantly they both agreed. And honestly, I kind of believe in things happening for a reason.
Yeah.
And that it was, I've heard about people thinking about podcasts and taking a long time to come up with, you know, similar to yourself, about, you know, is it what I want to do on this stuff? And I would never have put myself in this position going back a few years, think, oh, I'd be a podcast host. No chance. You know, it just wouldn't be there. But there's something told me, just message them straight away. Did it. And soon enough I had responses. Yeah, let's do it. And it just sort of blossomed in that respect. And we did, the first show is our most listened to show still. And it is raw. And if you've ever heard it, it was completely unedited. You can hear us chatting about what to do within the show. It is terrible in a good way.
I think it's, so, I wouldn't say terrible. I'd say it's rustic and charming.
Well, you know, we put it on the notes, and just like my first book, hopefully one day we'll look back on, because I believe I've improved in the second already, and I don't want to go back and change it and make it polished. I want people to know I came through that process. Mm. So it's there. And Sol, after a couple of episodes, she was the most busiest person we've ever known. And if you guys are watching this, I'm so sorry that in Wales, there's a sun in Wales. We're not used to it, but it's up there. And it's just shining through and making it look like, I don't know.
It actually just looks like the sun is shining through on the fancy brick wall you have behind you. So it kind of works.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Yeah. So
anyone who's listening is going to be very confused.
It's like a halo or some sort is shining down, or, you know, or getting beamed up by aliens. I'm not sure. but basically we ended up splitting with Sol because she had a massive YouTube commitment, a gaming thing, a mad insomniac, but she's a great character, but she just couldn't commit to what we needed. So after that, we were actually going to think about finding someone who was more on our time zone, who could be more engaging with us just out of basic timing, but we never did. Me and Chris just went, you know what, let's just stay in and just go with it and see what happens. And every show since, and you guys will know as well, if you have seen that or listened to it, is improved, has changed, has adapted, is different features, is different guests, and Now he's on video as well, like yourselves, and it's growing. And within 3 months, I think we've got like 3,000 followers on Twitter, and 30 plus guests that have been incredible.
I mean, it just exploded. I remember, because I only really got kind of stuck into the writing community on Twitter around when my book released, which was last August, coming up on a year. And then just out of nowhere, everyone started talking about the writing community chat show. And I was like, what is this? What? I've been on this hashtag for months. And who are these guys? And then it just, like you said, it just blew up, which I think shows how much something like this was needed.
Exactly. And that is the exact thing that I thought of. And I know there are writing podcasts around, and they are doing a great job, and there's some fantastic ones out there, but nothing was tailored to the writing community. And specifically to the hashtag. And that's what we wanted to do, because that's what I wanted to pay back, is their engagement, their help that gave me, probably would may have not written that book or released that book without their help. So that's what I wanted to give back, was to them. And as you're aware, we spoke briefly before we came on air that I have an audiobook in production as well. Same. And that is a result of one of our guests, AC Merkel, came on, and he is an indie author that, you know, is a big writing community engager, part of the Queer Indie group as well. He came on and told us about his production of audiobook and how he got into it. Bear in mind now, as an indie author, I had spent a couple of weeks trying to narrate my own audiobook, which went quite well until I had to actually act out voices. Then the world kind of went upside down. I was like, I can't do this. Just can't do it. So my journey for an audiobook had ended. I'd given up on the whole idea. It was never going to happen. And as someone I mentioned before, I really enjoy audiobooks. So I wanted this to happen. So I'd given up on the idea until one of the guests came on and shared his advice, like, you know, we are doing here. And he said about ACX.com and his process. And as simple as that, now it's in, you know, two chapters. I released the first chapter. The second chapter is a free chapter earlier on Twitter for people to listen to. And it's fantastic. An absolute brilliant narrator. And it's all technically, I don't want to say free, but a split royalty job.
Yeah.
And, you know, my work is done in that respect. They've just got to approve everything. And thanks to guests coming on from the writing community again, I now have another creation thanks to them. So
yeah. And I think that's one of the things I love, is it is a community. Like, it is called the writing community because things like that happen. You get advice that really helps, and, you know, things work on. I mean, you mentioned queerindie.com. Actually, I'll have two of the co-founders on as guests. I'll have Mario Dall'Olio, and I will have Halo Scott on as guests in later episodes. And like, I found out about that, and I got onto it, and I have had a couple of sales here and there come through that. So it's all just about reaching out and talking to people, and you get great advice and make connections.
You talk about the writing community and that forming communities within it, say the writing community chat show, and yourself as part of all this big circle that is now another community within inside that. The queerindie.com was another creation inside that again, which is now enormous again. You know, it's got many an author in there that you can go and find great books in. So, and Halo was our first guest ever. It's fantastic. And she's great to have on the show. And she's such an absolute fire within the writing community. And if you are within it, you need to know Halo, and you probably do. Yeah. So, and Mario again, fantastic. So it is really a good community, and it is well worth being part of, especially if you're a new author. You have to.
And even, I suppose, this, because this is one thing I didn't really understand about it. For anyone who's listening that or watching that are like, oh, well, I haven't finished my book. It's like, no, you're a writer. It's not called the published authors community. It's the writing community. It's for people
absolutely
on their first draft, on their 20th book. It's, and everyone in between.
There are so many people in on Twitter with their bio aspiring writer. Just get rid of that right now. Delete that aspiring and write, leave it as writer, because that's what you are. If you are doing it, you are a writer. If you are thinking about writing or producing something, then perhaps you are an aspiring author. But if you are writing and you are producing work, you are a writer stroke author.
Exactly.
So embrace it.
So that we'll call that like the beginning and how you got to where you are today. I'd like to go to the middle part now and tell me about kind of your day to day. So my number one question for you that I think you're going to really be able to help people with is, how do you find the time between, you have two books written, you have an audiobook on the way, you have a 4-show-a-week podcast, not to mention, you mentioned you read 3 or 4 books to your 4-year-old daughter every night, and you have 2 other kids, I believe, as well?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And everyone says this to me, how do you find the time? Well, how I'll find time to write with the show is going to be a new venture for me and a new thing to figure out, but I'm sure I will. My wife does a fantastic job of reading those books in the nighttime when I'm sat in here recording at times as well. So it's a good job. My boys, I've got twin boys and they're 16, so they're very much self-sufficient.
Okay.
And they can just do their Xbox or go out on the bike. You know, they're not really much in need for reading to, I don't think. They certainly haven't read my book yet. But in terms of the podcast, do you know what? I really believe in it. And I genuinely believe that this is a good thing that's helping people and is growing at a rapid rate. So for me, it was kind of an easy thing to suggest that, yes, I'm putting in hours here and there that may be used valuable hours with family and friends, to be honest with you, at sometimes. But me and Chris are quite flexible in, if we can't do it this day, we'll try and do it that day. And if we have to do it live at the time, we'll do it live at the time. So we are quite raw in that respect, but you know, people like it for that reason. So to be honest with you, I tend to stick, you know, we've got an Indie Wednesday show, which is just dropped on a Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
So we will get that prepared before ahead of time. So we do pre-record our interviews and video and audio now. So generally the editing, what I tweeted about this actually the other day, it could be advice for you or anyone else wanting to go into the podcast world. I started off, to be honest with you, because Chris is very lucky not to have to deal with all the editing side of things. But I very much delved into the world of, I've got to make this podcast perfect. I've got to edit things. I've got to have sound effects in here. I've got to drop in the song at the end. And if you remember the Oh Man guy, if anyone remembers him, at the end of every show, there was a scenario where something happened, like, you know, a monster came and he sliced a monster up and he went, oh man, every single episode, I had to create this and put it in. And it was becoming stressful, hard work. So it's gone. And now we do a good show that is just us and the interview and just a song at the end and that sort of thing. So just start simple. Mm-hmm. And that's the same with life in your writing. Just simplify things. Do I need to do this? Can I afford the time? When am I going to do it? So I can work on other things and make sure that other times in life you're doing the things you need to be doing. So it's just about management, really. And yes, we're recording 4 sort of shows a week. We're not recording 4 shows. We're dropping a Wednesday show, 2 shows on a Friday. So it's almost like it's split show, but they're big enough. And a live sort of 20-minute thing on a Thursday now where we meet a fan. So anyone who's in the writing community that wants to come on, chat for 5 minutes, tell us where they're from in the world and all of that stuff, we'll do that. So there are seemingly a lot of videos going out there, but it's kind of managed fairly well. So I think management is a key, is a must.
And I think as well, you mentioned that, you know, you split the jobs between yourself and Chris, and then as well, your wife is very supportive, obviously. So I think that's, like, for me, that was a big thing as well in terms of time management. You have to have it. You might be the only writer writing your book, but you're not the only person living your life. Like, there's friends and family, and, you know, reaching out and asking for a bit of help here and there, either on Twitter or like people you know in real life, all of those things kind of help to manage time.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think you nailed that on the head there. It's not a solo journey.
No.
At all. As a writer, you will be involving your family in some way. So yeah, definitely take that into account.
Exactly. So then, like, just in terms of your day to day, is there any, what did you write on? We all say pick up a pen, but I have yet to meet someone who actually I'm sure you're out there. If you are, please get in touch on Twitter. But you know, what do you use to actually draft your stories, and what software tips can you give?
So I started off, I use PC, a desktop, and I was writing with just Word to start with. And as I mentioned in school, I wasn't the most switched on guy, and this will maybe inspire a lot of people who were not confident in their abilities. And all I'm saying is thank the Lord for grammar software. So basically what I did is I did start using Word alone and just thought I need something else. I need a bit more support. And I went on YouTube again, because for me, if I need to find out anything or do anything, YouTube is the key. Honestly, if you need to know how to fix a car, which I have done from YouTube, you can do it on YouTube. So I started using a quick search and I went through grammar softwares, and Grammarly came straight up for me. And I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to go and read them all. That was at the top. I click on that and I just went on to it. So Grammarly I downloaded and I thought, okay, let's check it out. And it just highlighted certain things and maybe that sentence and stuff. So I thought, this is cool. So I used that for the majority of things. One tip I will say there, though, is make sure if you're using Grammarly in Word that you've got both settings, grammar settings, set to either the UK or America.
Yeah.
Not one or the other. Because for 1 minute, you'll be auto-correcting your Word spell check to an American or British thing, and then vice versa. Nightmare.
Very, very frustrating.
And yeah. And then I discovered something that may, I think, really helped me. And even though it's not really a software, it's a web browser. And this is a good tip for anyone who is, again, isn't confident that at the early stages in their sentence structure, because I wasn't. And I think I've improved massively in the second book and have been told this, which is a great confirmation of what I believed in. And that was a result of learning from these softwares. So it's not good. It isn't only good just to have them there to use. It's great to actually not just click it, just go, okay, what is that? You know, why is that changed? And actually learn from that software. So Hemingway app is what I discovered. Do you know, are you aware of that?
I know the name, but I've never looked into it exactly. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. If you go into just any sort of search engine and search Hemingway app, there's a page that is, you know, dedicated to Hemingway, obviously. And it just comes up and it's got text on. You think, what is this? But basically delete all the text in the middle of the page, drop your text in there. And what it will do is it will read your sentences and grade them like a school grade in America. So it will tell you your readability. So if you've got a sentence in there, that it'll highlight it in different colors. So if your sentence on there is like a red and it's saying like 10 plus whatever, I'm not sure on the school grades in America, it will be suggesting that that's a really complicated sentence to read. If you can actually get them down to say one or like zero, which is like a really simple sentence, but that's not always great. I mean, you don't want to have super simple sentences all the time, but what it does is identify stuff that may be clunky to read.
Something, so for me, that was convoluted, or you have too many pronouns in it and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but I do use something similar to that in my other life as a teacher, because sometimes, you know, kids don't want to read. So I have in the past been like, right, okay, what's your dog's name? What's your mom's name? Da, 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 da. And then I'll go home that evening and write a quick story about them. And I'll use software similar to the Hemingway app to kind of bring it to the level I want it to be.
Yeah, well, it's definitely worth checking out, and it's something I would advise new authors to use, even if it's just a confirmation of what you think you've done.
Just
run it in. Just copy text, drop it in. That's all you have to do, and it'll instantly highlight what may be an issue or may not be an issue. So it's worth doing for nothing, for free as well. So
yeah, no, it's good, and it's like, that's the thing. Like, no one's going to hear about tools like this if we don't talk and ask and all that kind of a thing. What do you think is, where do you get inspiration from now in your day to day? You know, like anything that you're writing on at the minute, where are you getting the ideas? Or are you still lucky enough that you have that cinema in your head and you're just typing?
I have found myself, the more I started writing and reading other books and just developing my skill as an author, I guess, I found myself having ideas growing in the back of my head that are not the same series that I'm writing. So I have found myself, you know, obviously I'm a big fan of zombies. I love The Walking Dead, you know, those sort of shows. And so it was kind of a natural transition for my book to go in that direction. But what I didn't realize is I've watched horror films quite a lot in my life, but never really loved them. I thought they're often cheesy or over the top, or there's always like some reason that's not great. And there's been a nagging sensation to write a really good horror. Okay. And I think that's because I haven't seen something that really scares the shit out. Oh, sorry. Scares me.
That's fine.
I'm sorry. Scares the shit out of me then. Because, and I just want to write stuff that's more, you know, if you've seen the Aliens trilogy or the Aliens films, so the first Alien was one of the most...
Oh, it's a horror film.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's not a lot of horror happens.
It's a sci-fi setting, but it's not a science fiction film. Like,
not at all. And there's a lot of tension in there. And there's another film called No Escape. Have you seen that?
It doesn't ring a bell, no.
That's on Netflix. Check it out, because you'll have... This is my reason. You will have sweaty palms the entire way through that film. And it makes you feel anxious and tense. And this is the sort of thing that I want to bring out. And it's so... I've got this nagging feeling to drive a horror film. But then there's another idea that came around, like a space sort of thing. And it's like these ideas are starting to appear. And they've never done this before. So I think it's just a result of my imagination growing. But as you mentioned, I've written the first book, and now the sequel's about to release, the audiobook's in production. And then the prequel, which I'm very excited about writing. So I think those stories are there, but it may take a while for them to come out.
So I suppose your inspiration really is coming from just being more aware that literally everything that you watch on television, with the exception of live events, is written by somebody. Like, somebody has...
Absolutely.
And that's... sometimes I absolutely hate it when I see a really good film or TV show or something that has a really unique premise, and I'm just like, oh, why didn't I think of that? That's such a good idea.
Oh, I know. It's a killer, isn't it? And I mean, if you look at those films I was talking about, say the Aliens films, they look great now. And these were films that were released in the 80s, early 80s, when technology wasn't even there to do what they did. No. And to think that people were writing those sort of amazing stories back in the 70s and the 60s, then, you know, I know it's a struggle to do things now that are genuine, that are not already sort of covered in some direction, but you've just got to put your unique spin on things and just be... just write down what you want to see. I think that's my biggest advice in that respect.
That's a really... write down what you want to see. That's a really good way to put it. On a side note, we could do a whole episode on horror films. I'm a huge horror film aficionado. I'm actually surprised that you mentioned a film I hadn't heard of. But anyway, so my last question...
Just before you go off on that one, that's another thing. It's not even a horror film.
Oh,
it is, okay. I guess. Well, it is, because it's reality horror, but it's not like an usual slasher type thing. It's kind of a realistic situation, but the scenarios that you put yourself in watching, or you watch, that can make you on edge and make you nervous is the sort of thing that I think would be is being lost in horror films. You know, now you see things getting dragged down corridors, and it's in my head. It's like, I don't really feel that. I feel someone turning it. Do you know what I mean? Tension is there. That's what
you can really predict it, some horror films. So my next question is, what has been to date your proudest moment as a writer?
Wow. Do you know what? I mean, it's something that happened like last weekend, literally. My brother-in-law. My brother-in-law is... he's opened up his restaurant, and he's sort of followed his dreams in that respect. And even though he had his own sort of business, he's gone into this doing what he wanted to do. And I sort of, you know, help out because it's new, and I'll just give him a hand. So I was delivering locally burgers and stuff that he makes, amazing food. And I got to one of the addresses, and I didn't know the lady there. And I started speaking to her, my brother-in-law's business, and I'm just helping out. And she said, oh, you're married to Sarah. And I was like, yeah. She goes, you wrote that book. I said, yeah. And she goes, oh, I love that book. I left a review, and the new one's out soon, isn't it? I was like, no way.
Oh, that's amazing.
I drove away with a big smile on my face for about 15 minutes, because it was just so surreal. I mean, it's the first time it's ever happened in that respect. So fantastic. Yeah.
That's brilliant. I had mentioned I had that moment as well. The fella that was in my class in school coming up. That's brilliant.
It is really good. Very chuffed with that.
It's such a huge feeling, isn't it, when a stranger goes like, I've read your book and I really loved it.
It's just it's that belief factor that, you know, especially if you say in my background, who didn't really believe in that, you know, going to be good enough to, you know, even still, like, you know, I know if you're massively a grammar, you've got a keen eye for that sort of stuff, you're going to think, okay, that can be different, rather than just focusing on what I've written story-wise. So I never thought that many people would be so keen on the story, But I kind of did at the same time because it's, I love it as well. So if I do, someone will. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it. I always say, like you said it yourself, you're writing the kind of things you want to see. So, I mean, you're not alone. Someone else is going to want to see something similar. And obviously that woman you were delivering food did it too.
No, and that's the thing, that she wasn't sort of in my age bracket and sort of the person that I'd expect to be reading my book as well. No offense to slightly older readers, whatever, but, and she even said, I think she said that it wasn't really her normal type of book either. So that is like a really good compliment that she's read something different and for whatever reason, and really enjoyed it and recognized who I was. So, which is crazy. Absolutely crazy.
So now for the last part of the interview, and it'll be the shortest part as well. It's, usually it's beginning, middle, end, but we're not going to call this end. We're going to call it to be continued. So
excellent.
First thing is, what are you going to do when this interview is over? Like what's your right now, straight away this evening? What are you up to?
Oh, well, I'm a bit of a football fan and it's the last game of the season. And as a Cardiff City fan, there is a crucial game happening right now. It's about half time, which yes,
for what it's worth, I just want the listeners to know that you picked this time. I was like, I'm free all day.
I did, and I didn't foresee this, but I was more than happy to come and speak to you because, you know, this is bigger than football. But I will go and get myself a beer, and I will sit and watch Sky Sports News for the last half hour. And it's a crucial game that may or may not determine playoffs and promotion to the Premier League. So we'll see.
All right, okay, big match. So then, that's your short term. What's your long term goal as a writer? In general, like obviously there's I have more books. You mentioned the ideas you have. Obviously you want the writing community chat show to grow as well. But what are the kind of big, you know, huge goals that you're thinking of?
Well, I always have said, because I'm a big fan of TV and film, I just am. And it's, you know, as writers kind of, I'm not sure if that's looked down upon or not, or the, you know, or if it's embraced, but because I know people think, oh, books are books, books, books. But for me, it's those stories that really, as a youngster, threw me into the world that people got from reading, but I just wasn't doing that at the time. Mm-hmm. So my love like that is more in the world of film. And I've always said I would love this to be a production, this story, not something I'm going to write. I want this one would be fantastic, but you know, it's the real world. Even things get optioned and don't ever get picked up. So, but I would be very much happy if someone, I've always said this as well on my website, the day that fan art comes in, I think will be absolutely wonderful and probably the next proudest moment, because if someone who very artistic out there has read my book and loves the characters that much that they'll draw them and bring them to life, I think that'd be amazing.
Cool. That's a nice goal to have as well. So basically what your goal is to just have someone love your book enough to create their own bit of art inspired by it. So
hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's brilliant. You've kind of said my next question is supposed to be what are you working on right now, but you've mentioned that. So is there any goals you have that has nothing to do with writing?
Well, I'm getting back into my fitness quite a lot at the moment, and okay, that could be a result of this show and feeling like the need to be presentable on screen. So I did a Tough Mudder and a half marathon in 2012. Wow. And that was quite a while ago now. And I felt fit then, and I haven't felt fit for a long time. So I'm working on that. And I think a Spartan race, when the world goes back to normal, I think I really want to try and get a Spartan race done under my belt, which would be hard.
That'd be really cool. You could do a virtual one with maybe with the writing community chat show guests or something like that.
Oof, no, I'm not sure.
Everyone starts at the same time.
We could do some sort of event like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess long-term goal, if we're going to go down this route, the show, and by the way, if your show grows in this respect too, even if it doesn't, you can come on this. We said about if it does do what we hope it does and grows to a really good level, we have got a lot of fans like the people you're having on the show, you know, Halos and people like that, that are America. And weirdly, 48% of our fan base is American. I don't know why. And we actually are played in like 28 countries around the world, like Kingston, Jamaica, Israel, just all over the place. So we want to take like to a roadshow to some sort of book conference in America at some point and in Britain, just to meet all the writing community people, because that would be the best thing ever. So all the people that we constantly engage with, we know by name, we've seen faces of, just to actually go and meet them, have a drink with them in whatever book conference somewhere. It'd just be fantastic.
So. Yeah, at that point, it's more like the book conference is the reason, but the meeting people is the goal.
A swig.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have only two questions left. One is there any, could you tell if anyone's listening and they're like, "Wow, this Chris guy sounds interesting. I want to follow him on Twitter or check out his website or anything." Can you tell us all the
I'm sure. I'm gonna have to pull this up on screen just because I'll mess it up right here. So on Twitter, I am at CJ Agget, which is CJAGGETT Agget. And my Twitter is linked to my writing community chat show account as well. So if you can't find me on Twitter, just go to @writing_show and you'll find me on there with me and other Chris guests wise. And my website, do you know what? We've got links to our websites and our books and stuff on the writing community website. So just go to thewritingcommunitychatshow.com and you'll see a wonderful website up there. Just go and find it all up there.
Perfect. And then my very final question, and I'm giving everyone the same very final question. What was the last book you read?
The last book I read, do you want book or audiobook? Or is that?
An audiobook is a book, man.
Okay. The Institute by Stephen King is the last one I listened to. And I'm currently, if this is any consolation, listening to, and I'm going to review, and I think this is amazing. It's a new Audible thing with DC. The Sandman.
Yes.
Fantastic.
I'm listening to it as well. It's
great.
Amazing.
Yes.
Chris, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much for being the very first guest. I'm also very happy that I was the person who, the very first interviewer to have you on as well. So it's a whole lot of firsts.
It's fantastic. Honestly, I'm really, really like honored, I said at the start of this, to come on a show and to give my side of the story, because it, you know, kind of hasn't happened. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity. Thank you very much. Cheers. Thank you, guys.
As you heard, I'm sure I really interviewed Chris. I really enjoyed interviewing Chris, and I'm so grateful that he agreed to come onto the show and agreed to be the first ever guest, and I hope you found it entertaining too. If you liked the show, be sure to subscribe or tell a friend or whatever, but if you loved the show, check out Patreon. Patreon is a system where you can pledge a certain amount of money, either a month or per episode. The Patreon page for this is per month, and you can pledge as little as €1, and in exchange you get different perks for different amounts of pledges. Personally, I'm offering a space, an advertising space essentially, on my main website, early access to episodes, bonus episodes that will be for patrons through Patreon only, and I'm even going to have a writing critique service. So if you're really interested in having someone else read and critique your writing, check out Patreon. Episodes 2 and 3 are available right now on all podcasting directories that you can find. But if you really want to skip ahead to episode 4 and listen to an interview by a woman, Halo Scott, then you can go to the Patreon page. There'll be a link in the show notes and description. And through it, you can subscribe and then get access to Halo's episode. But for now, listen to episode 2, where I speak with Bosnian fantasy author Nemanja Pavlovic. We talk about illustrations, fantasy role-playing games, and the effect that the War of the 90s had on his writing. And it's a really great interview. See you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you loved listening to this episode just as much as I loved recording it. If you like the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or over on Podchaser. Until then, be good, be brave, and tell stories. See ya!